Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Gil Alexander of A Numbers Game will join us. We will go over the NBA Western Conference Finals. We will have a Game 7, and that will be Saturday night, Oklahoma City Thunder, a 3.5-point favorite as they were destroyed in Game 6. In Game 6, was really more of the same in this series where, you know, for four games, the team that was home and coming off of a loss wins convincingly, covers, and, you know, middle of the third quarter, there's really not that much to watch. The result is not in doubt. It's been a letdown if you're just a pure basketball fan, forgetting bets for a second, forgetting, you know, who you're rooting for, especially with, A, the anticipation going into the series. That Monday Night Classic, it was just like a video game. It was too good to be true. It was almost like it wasn't real with the incredible shot-making on both sides. And just like, wow, what are we in store for? This is going to be awesome. Game 2 was actually not that bad. 9-point Thunder win. Thunder pulled away late. But they were in control for the most part. But since then, we really haven't gotten much in terms of competitive games. San Antonio gets off to a 15-0 start in Game 3. OKC runs by them. San Antonio responds, OKC responds, and here we are, one game to go to the finals. And it's funny to sit here and watch six games. I don't know what I've learned. I don't know what I think. It's just been a very strange series, a confusing series. I mean, I guess they are pretty evenly matched teams, despite the fact that these are all blowouts. Reminds me a little bit, 2016, the Warriors-Cavs, where everyone thinks, oh, it went seven. Game seven was a classic. The first six games of that series were all blowouts, so I don't know, just one of those things, kind of those anomalies, oddities, whatever you want to call it, where the teams are evenly matched and you're going seven, but a lot of the games have not been competitive. I get the sense Game 7 will be competitive. Do is a dangerous word, but at some point here, these two teams, you figure, have one game here, nerves of Game 7, things like that. You figure you're kind of due for a close game here, so I would think we would get that, but, you know, I would have thought that the last three or four games here, and it hasn't happened, so I think OKC wins. I think the home court will get them home. Role players play better at home. All of those things. You know, close game, maybe they pull away, win by seven or eight late, that kind of game. So we'll see. Game seven, nothing beats it. And we'll see here if we can salvage what has been an otherwise kind of disappointing series. Caruso got steamed on Thursday, right before the game for MVP. All the way down from 35-1, he went to like 14-1 at DraftKings. You know, voters on the record saying, hey, you know, he's my guy. I would vote for him. We'll see. SGA, it's the same thing where he puts up the volume of points and he compiles the numbers, but the efficiency's not there. We'll see. Of course, OKC has to win the game. That's the that's the first thing. That's, you know, you're not going to win it if San Antonio wins. But if OKC won, I'd say still probably, you know, 70-30 SGA, 75-25, but who knows? We got multiple voters expressing enthusiasm for Caruso. So we'll see. Hopefully we get a good game. I do think we'll get a good game. And I'll say OKC wins and kind of pulls away and goes to the second straight NBA Finals where they will meet the Knicks on Wednesday night. So hard to have a great feel, hard to have a great deal of confidence, you know, no matter who you're picking, just because it's been such an up and down, just seesaw series. But the one kind of constant, the team that loses the previous game responds. It's the old classic zigzag where you just, you bet on the team that lost the previous game. And that has been, at least in this series, a tried and true method that has gotten you home. And really none of them have been that competitive here. Where you just, except for game two to game three, where the Thunder won and covered back to back, this is just, you take the team that lost and you kind of alternate and you don't overthink it now. It's easy to say that now. And there was a lot of sentiment, A, for the Thunder going into game six and B, for the Spurs going into game five, which I think is probably the lesson in all of this. As a sports bettor, if you can not forget or ignore the last thing you saw, but just not overreact to it, it's very hard to do. It's very easy to watch this and say, hey, this team A smoked team B. I just watched it with my own eyes. It's going to happen again. There's not always that correlation between one game to the next. These games can look very different. I've said that, you know, throughout all these series, these games can look very different when you change venues. These games can look very different night to night. It's hard for the brain to kind of comprehend that or wrap around like, hey, this team just got, you know, beaten by 15, 20 points. They're going to win by 15 or 20 points. It kind of defies logic, but you have to be able to put that stuff out of your head and you know, not overreact to the previous game. So again, OKC, I like them in seven. I think SGA probably wins MVP. If you took a shot at Caruso, 20-1 MVP, I get it with the sentiment from Bontemps and McMahon. You know, certainly, you know, you're, I mean, you're not getting 50-1, 100-1, 120-1, but still 20-1s, you know, it's not 2-1 or 3-1. It's, you're getting a nice bang for your buck. So we'll see. Hoping for a good game. Again, haven't learned too much, and we'll see what we have in store here for a game seven on a Saturday night. But coming up, Gil Alexander will talk NBA. We'll talk tennis, one of just the all-time bad beats on Thursday. See if he's got any Major League Baseball bets, French Open bets for today. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him a numbers game, the Beating the Book Megapod. He joins us now, Gil Alexander. Gilly, we will have a game seven. I don't think any of us are surprised we have a game seven. It's just how we got here. I guess my takeaway before I throw it to you would be it can be a good skill sometimes when you're betting sports to just either forget or not overreact to the last thing we saw. And I guess this series is a good example of it. How's it going, man?
Thanks for having me. I texted you earlier. This is the least competitive series I ever remember. Besides game one, this has just been blowout back and forth, or maybe not blowout, but almost blowout, if not a blowout, in all the remaining five games. And I don't know, first of all, from a betting standpoint, great night for Spurs backers. I don't know that we've learned anything in six games. Like, I legit feel like I'm a guy who has a Spurs ticket. I know you have a Spurs ticket. I feel the same way I do right now as I did before game one. And to your point about people overreacting, people do overreact. You know, oh, Wemby's tired right after the last. Oh, you could tell he's physically tired, physically exhausted. He's not tired. He's a kid. He's not tired. Everybody's going to be ready to go game seven. Nothing would surprise me. Thunder roll 'em wouldn't surprise me. Spurs winning would not surprise me. May the best team win. I just hope the refs don't get involved to the point where it ruins it.
FanDuel has OKC by 3.5. DraftKings a little higher. They're both down to 3.5 now. Total 210.5. 155. The money line minus 155. Comeback plus 130. Sound about right? If you didn't have any bets, would you be cutting in line to bet the Spurs? Or is this, you know what, it's going to be fun to watch, but good luck betting it.
Good luck betting it.
Yeah,
I mean, again, as someone with a Spurs conviction, I would be inclined to lean that way. But again, like, if OKC won by 15, or if the Spurs won a la Miami Heat, nothing would surprise me with that. 3.5, you know, so after game one, I was shocked that the line got bigger in game two. I thought it was going to come down to 4.5. I guess there's all these zigzag trends that people bought into, and that's what the market went. And they did cover. OKC did. It got to 4.5 in game five, which is where I thought it would be for game two. And now you're saying we're at 3.5. Probably makes a lot of sense. That's where it ought to be. These are the two best teams in basketball. I also, you know, if you project forward, I hope I'm not cutting in line for what your next question was going to be. I still feel like whoever wins this game seven crushes the Knicks. I really do.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, my take has been, I've heard this a lot from people. The one thing I've heard constantly since Monday night, Memorial Day, and when the game, and that was a blowout too, when the game becomes that much of a blowout, people just, you know, very quickly focus on the next thing, their next prediction. I've heard so much of, you know, nobody's giving the Knicks a chance, but I am. I think the consensus by the time we start that series, it will be that the Knicks are a very live dog. They've destroyed everyone for a month. The last time they lost a basketball game was the night of the first round of the NFL draft, and all these are by double digits, so you have to give them a chance. I do think a couple things, though. Reminds me a little bit, and I'm curious what you think. Celtics-Mavs a couple years ago, if you remember, the Mavs were very trendy. They had Luka, got the best player. They're a plus price. Everyone loved Dallas. They got smoked. And you'll remember this well, those four Cavs-Warriors series. Every year, the Cavs would go into Golden State game one and game two, and it was just a different speed to the West team. And there was an adjustment for Cleveland, and Golden State would not only win those first two games usually, but usually win them pretty convincingly. I wonder if there's a similar sort of sentiment with that, where we're all kind of underestimating, those of us that give the Knicks a chance, we're maybe underestimating the gap between the West and the East.
That's exactly what I think. Everything you say, I agree with, which is you're right. By the time that series starts, June 3rd, if it's the Thunder or the Spurs, the Knicks will be more and more of a trendy dog. Everything you said, the greatest 10-11 game stretch in the history of the NBA regular season or postseason in terms of winning margin. But this is just a different speed. And in tennis matches, I call it a step up in competition. You know, when you all of a sudden have to play someone much better than you, if you're the 40th ranked player in the world, this is that. I mean, the Knicks are great against those Eastern Conference teams, especially if it's the Thunder, by the way. And I say this as a guy who has Spurs ticket, right? So I'm rooting for the Spurs in Game 7. But I think specifically also if it's the Thunder, I don't know that the Knicks take a game off of them where I could see them taking one off the Spurs. Like, that's how non-competitive I think it is. What I did think about tonight's game, going back to Game 6, though, and I want to see if you agree with this, I thought this was the real return of Dylan Harper tonight. Even though his body's been out there the last couple games, this is the second best Spur. And so now they feel fully, like, as healthy as they've been. Whereas J-Dub, what, three-minute spurts at a time? Still no A.J. Mitchell? I mean, boy, that seems like a disadvantage for OKC in Game 7, man.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, why it's a hard series to predict. It's hard enough to pick these games when all things are being equal and these teams are healthy. When you have multiple key players on both sides hurt, and the Spurs guys are playing through it, the OKC guys haven't been playing through it, until tonight. It's just that, it's such a curveball. It's like, all right, are these guys going to, a day off here, look like 90% of Dylan Harper? Is it going to be 60%? That makes it, I don't know if you felt the same way, where that's a curveball that's kind of hard to gauge in terms of this series.
It is. It's just weird. Like, I'll go back to an original statement for me, which is the least competitive series. Like, we've been waiting for this collision course for the entire NBA season. And Game 1 lived up to the hype in such a big way. Remember, it was the Game 1 Spurs-Thunder coupled with that amazing Knicks comeback in Game 1 of the East. And you're like, oh my God, this was so worth the wait. This is great. And then we saw nothing since again, right? So these games just drift and it becomes a tough watch. But now it's 48 minutes where the NBA championship comes down to 48 minutes of basketball, which can't wait. Hope it's great.
I'm looking forward to it too. Should be fun. Saturday night, all this on the line, Wemby with a chance to break through, OKC looking for back-to-back. I'm excited for it. It does remind me a little bit. I mentioned this in my open. Cavs Warriors was like this 2016, where remember, oh man, game seven was close, but the first six games of that series were blowouts.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the inverse of that. Although game two in the series was not as lopsided as the final score. I think that one landed on 9 and the Spurs were pretty competitive in that game. Had a chance to like cut it to 2 in the last minute or so. And the thing, too, before I get to MVP handicapping the game, the points haven't mattered. Like, it seems like all playoffs, and you would know, you've done a really good job, but I want to get the update here on the contest. But it's not like you bet the dog and your team loses but covers. It's just like whoever wins covers, the favorite wins and they win comfortably. The points have been irrelevant and really just seems like about all these games here.
Yeah. It's funny. I haven't really kept track of that, but certainly here in the Knicks run, that's been the case. And this series in the West, it's certainly been the case. I don't know. It's sort of this weird thing. Like, I remember last year's run with the Pacers, and I remember calling it interminable, even though it was really fun to watch. And every Pacers game seemed like this unbelievably competitive game. This year, I feel like it's not been interminable, and yet I feel like there hasn't been as much on a night-to-night basis. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, it's been a fun playoffs. The right two teams are here. The Knicks deserve it, what they did in the East. Maybe that's the headline of the playoffs, that we all should have been smarter about the Knicks. That in a weak East, the team with the veteran, with all that experience in the playoffs and the shorter rotation would ultimately end up dominating. Maybe not the way that they've dominated. We could never predict that. But maybe that's where we all really erred.
If you would have told me before the playoffs, the Knicks come out of the East, I'd say, oh, okay, like mild surprise. But the way they've just trucked people, teams don't do this. Usually the teams that dominate are the teams that give you a clue, like that, you know, the 0-1 Lakers, the Warriors of 17, the Bulls. There's some track record of it, whether it's in the regular season or in past years. But part of it, they caught a nice bracket. The Celtics got knocked off. By the time the Sixers got there, they were limping. The Cavs played 2-7 gamers. So, but look, it doesn't take anything away from the one thing too. I would add, I don't know if you saw this stat. I believe in this month long stretch, the league average from three is 35%. The Knicks are shooting 43%, and their opponents are shooting 29%. So you say it all the time, the three-pointers, yeah. And this is a long stretch, but this is still a relatively small sample size, and that can kind of distort things. When you're really shooting, when you're making every three and your opponent's missing all their threes, things are going to look different.
Just think about all the bodies the Thunder and or Spurs can throw at the Knicks versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, right?
Right.
It's just a totally different animal that we're about to see. But game seven before that, of course.
Let's see. Western Conference Finals MVP. And Caruso got a lot of money on Thursday here before the game. It would have been interesting if the Thunder won. What would have happened with that award? SGA minus 155. Wemby plus 155. Caruso 20-1 or so. What are your thoughts? Is there a bet to be made here? Is Caruso live, or is this just, are we overthinking it, talking ourselves into our bet?
I was thinking about that through your bet most of the night. And I was thinking, okay, Caruso's not doing anything, but SGA's not doing anything either. And, look now, the Thunder, what's this, to right. quote Stevie? Oh, yes. Now the Thunder aren't doing anything, right? So this was a complete nothing burger for the Thunder. So first of all, it's very simple. Spurs win, it's Wemby. I think we all agree on that. There's virtually no way it can't be Wemby if the Spurs win. If OKC wins, then the question is what you pose, which is, okay, well, I mean, here are the scenarios. Scenario A, SGA and Caruso perform, it's not a great SGA game. It's sort of a meh, but pretty good SGA game, and Caruso does some great stuff again. Is that scenario enough? Obviously, if Caruso does really, really well and SGA doesn't do well at all, let's just imagine that. I think you have a chance. In that first scenario, man, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure, because if you put the box scores against each other, the collective box score of SGA and Caruso, as great as Caruso has been, he has had a couple games where he disappeared.
Right.
And SGA's box score is just filled, especially if he just does anything in game seven. So I don't know how sophisticated these voters are. I was mentioning it this morning on the radio side. Think of all the different bets we've had in awards through the years.
Oh, boy.
Where we can talk ourselves into a very credible, I think, salient points about, whether it's Con Knepel for Rookie of the Year this year, Spencer Strider, until he blew up that one year with Zion. I don't know,
Juan Soto MVP for
Juan Soto three or four MVP. So many of those. So I guess what I'm saying is, would I make a bet? What's he now, 20-1?
Yeah.
I don't think I could. I think at your number, different story after game one, 120-1 or whatever it was that you got it at. Am I selling you short? 125?
No, that's what it was. Yeah. The only thing, and I completely agree with just about everything you said, the only thing is, like, we've had voters express enthusiasm for Caruso. Otherwise, I'd be like, yes. You know what? He's had too many duds. He's a, he's a lesser player. He's a role player. But the fact that you have multiple voters, and I think they're voters, it's hard to, like, really pin down who the voters are. But Bontemps and McMahon, at least they were speaking like voters. And there's only nine of them. So if you got two of the nine saying, hey, Caruso's our guy, Reggie Miller's been big on Caruso, that's three. You only need a couple more. That doesn't mean it's etched in stone that they're voting for them. But that has given me where I would pretty much be dismissive of it and go, I can't see this getting home. The fact that voters are on the record, and it's different than other awards where they're not as outspoken, that's what's kind of changed the handicap, I think, and moved the number.
And that's interesting, because that then gets back to what you just said, which is, had it ended tonight, let's say OKC wins tonight, and I don't know how to put it, but essentially both of them are neither one of them does anything. Like, SGA doesn't do anything spectacular. Right. Caruso's pretty good. I think you had a better chance of winning it then and now, right here and now, pardon me, here and now, than drifting one game further out, having voters sort of now have two more days to ponder this, look at the collective and be like, well, out of six games, Caruso really didn't do anything in two of them. But SGA is always SGA and everyone. So if they win in seven, that's why now I think Caruso actually has to actively win it again. Whereas I think tonight you could have passively won it, if that makes any sense.
Gut feeling for Saturday is what? I'll give you these four scenarios. Thunder in a blowout, Thunder in a close game, Spurs in a blowout, Spurs in a close game. What's the most likely of the four in your mind?
I'm going to say Spurs in a close game. How about that?
I feel like we're going to get a close game too. Maybe it's just being optimistic and wanting it to happen, but I don't know. I just can't see the last five or six games being, game two wasn't that bad, but the last five games, all blowouts, all you could have basically turned the game off in the fourth quarter. That's just, I guess it could happen. We're not entitled to anything, but I have a feeling we'll have a close one too.
Just don't have anybody in foul trouble that tilts the field, you know, it tilts the court in one direction. That would be my guess. Spurs close is number one. Thunder close is number two. Thunder blowout's number three. Spurs blowout would be the last of those.
What's the update on the contest?
I have not clinched. There's a killer sports challenge. We have 38 total picks. We're 35 done. I have a 2-game lead over Kyle Akins of Killer Sports, 3-game lead over Steve Fezzik and Zach Cohen. I guess they could mathematically tie. But it's only the four of us now at this point. But Kyle won tonight, so he is still alive for the number one prize. Everybody, those three guys also fighting for the number two position if they don't get number one.
Excited to win if you win, dying to win. It's what's the level? Because I won the Circuit College Hoops one in 2023, and I was excited to win. It was fun. It was it's you want to win. We're competitive. That's why we do this. We want to beat the line. But there was part of it too where I was leading most of the way, and I almost gacked it up at the end where I extra wanted to win just to avoid the embarrassment of the choke. I didn't want to be the 78.
There's more relief in the end. More relief in the end. Yeah.
Absolutely. What's where are you at?
I mean, I obviously want to win. I was telling Carl Sack, who created it from Killer Sports. We did last year too. Steve Fezzik finished first last year. I finished fourth last year out of 15. I want to win it. It made the playoffs so much more enjoyable because the 15 of us are very competitive. Everybody wants to beat everybody else. Listen, I'm super grateful for it. I'd be very happy to win it. Not like I'm going to go post it on my Twitter bio if I win the championship or anything. But it's fun to be competitive and to compete and contend both years. And so hopefully I can get the championship here.
Anything else on basketball, or should we get to, and I'm just going to give you the floor, and I guess, do you have anything else on hoops, or should we get to Sinner and trying to comprehend what happened? I'll give you the floor. You'll do a better job than me. Can you put into context what we saw today at the French Open?
Let's put it in a quantitative context. Slams modern tennis history, only Rafa Nadal at one of his French Opens was a bigger pre-flop favorite in a slam in modern tennis history than was Jannik Sinner heading into this tournament. Sinner, of course, because of the absence of Carlos Alcaraz. By the way, it should be noted that the one time where Nadal was bigger, minus 400, into one of the French Opens, he actually lost that French Open. So here we are, Sinner loses this morning. Joe Pita texted me, he says, he said it had to be the greatest upset in sports history. And his point was, he goes, it's not like Russia was up 4-0 against the USA in Lake Placid, right? It was up two sets, up 5-1. And this is where, again, we're all football and basketball fans and hockey fans and baseball fans. We all think these sports are, there is nothing like tennis. You are out there on an island. You have no teammates to rely on. No clock to run out. You're on the cusp. You're up two sets. You're one game away. The fact that he had nothing left physically to push himself over for that one mere game. And, Zach and I were talking about this morning because some people are saying, oh, what a choke. It's not a choke. It just is what it is. He couldn't physically take it anymore. And that's part of this, man. It's physical endurance out in the sun. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. It was the only way he was going to lose in this tournament. I firmly believe it.
Anything you would play at the moment, either matches for Friday or futures going forward?
Still got Iga future going. I lost on center. I had center at a great number, minus 120.
Oh, me too. Oh, me yeah. too. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I, you know, it's funny because I had like 10 tennis plays 2 days ago. I had four yesterday. I only have two for tomorrow. And they're both spreads and they're both on the ladies' side. Very slim pickings to me because I think most of the chalk is justifiable chalk. I actually think tomorrow, he says very cautiously, I actually think we're not going to see a lot of upsets. So it's interesting how the cookie has crumbled with the tournament, how, oh my God, I remember two nights ago I texted you guys. I was like, oh my God, I like way too much tennis.
Yeah.
And I had 10 plays, and then yesterday four, and now just two as we head into the round of three. But on the men's side, just answering the question about, I haven't made any more futures bets. Now that center is out, I haven't added. But right now, to me, Sasha Zverev is going to think to himself, oh my God, finally I have a chance. I thought I squandered my chances to win a slam. Maybe this is finally my chance. Novak is saying to himself, holy crap. You know, if you give these guys truth serum, I never thought I could get to 25, but maybe this is finally my chance to get to 25. And then there's the young guys, Rafa Hodar, specifically, who's like, God, is it too early for me to win, you know, a Grand Slam? So the interesting question is, will the winner of the men's side of this Grand Slam be a one-time only Grand Slam winner? Todd Wright asked me this question today. And my answer to him was, if it's Novak, obviously not. If it's either of the young guys, Rafa Hodar or Joao Fonseca, then it won't be a one-timer. Anybody else who wins this, I think it's their one and only slam. But I haven't made a bet. I have Francisco Cerúndolo to win his quarter. He's kind of the best value play based on the number. Nobody's really thinking about him. But it's in terms of great clay numbers, now that Sinner is out, it's Casper Ruud 1. And he's been a finalist at this tournament before. And then it is, I want to say, I'll check right now. I want to say it's Cerúndolo 2. Don't hold me to that. Let me check right now. But the value play right now would be on him. Francisco Cerúndolo, not Juan Manuel Cerúndolo, who beat Sinner.
Yeah, and I am not exactly itching to jump back in after the that Sinner experience on Thursday. I'll probably just catch my breath for a couple days and sit on the sidelines. Last couple, the best baseball bet to make right now, future award, win total, you name it, is what?
The best baseball bet to make right now is, what are your Yankees to win the East?
$1.70, $1.80 or so, minus $1.70.
That's the best bet. That's the best bet. It's not a sexy play.
I'm with you. I completely agree.
Yeah, they have a really easy June schedule also. Tampa Bay does too, by the way. Though Tampa Bay has a Dodgers series in there. But I think, you know, Yankees constantly get back reinforcements. They can just fix that bullpen. You were talking about this, right, the other day, or Todd was. I think Todd Wishnev was on air. That's the best bet going, because I trust them more than almost anybody.
And you know this, I am the biggest Yankee hater. For someone who's a fan, I've been a fan my whole life. Yes. I'm the biggest Yankee. I just despise the way they run business, and it jades me sometimes. But I have to admit, the lineup, the pitching, just power arms, power bats. I don't love the bullpen. I could see them, you know, getting bit in a big spot. And these people that say, oh, they're a lock to be in the World Series, that's just not how baseball works, and they're absolutely not a lock. But I agree they should win that division. Last one, Fezzik will be on Friday. What is it like for you trying to referee Fezzik taking shots at Wishnev taking shots at Fezzik? You know, there's a lot of slander about each other's tennis games. What is it like for you trying to referee this?
I don't know. I think I take more pleasure from guest-on-guest crime on this show than almost anything, because for me, it feels like family when it happens, right?
Yes.
Like, it's just brothers bickering. It was so funny when Todd just took a left turn the other day and went after Fezzik. It was, I compared it this morning. I was like, imagine if Joe Torre, was on Mad Dog Radio talking about the Yankees. And then all of a sudden, 90 seconds before the end of his segment, he decided to talk about his beefs with his bocce ball buddies. That's kind of how that felt to me. They're all different personalities. Todd is a complete wild card who cannot be corralled. I think Stevie, on the other hand, even though he secretly won't admit this, you know, he won't admit it, but I think secretly he appreciates that sometimes I give it back to him and sort of like check him on some of his stuff. But he's obviously an amazing mathematical mind. It's just, you're great. Falik is great. Part of the greatness of doing that show, I think Kelly and I would both say, is not only do we have a blast, but it wouldn't be anywhere, you know, where it is without you guys doing it. And so it's, everybody's got different sort of personalities, and everybody loves sports except for Fezzik. He would be the first person to say, he goes, I don't love it. I just love math and betting. So that's part of the charm.
And the listeners. I mean, there's always, when and we do the this, listeners. There's always one or two, but the listeners, I mean, I know because I go on a bunch of different shows, you know, do the Fox one, going on a numbers game, the feedback, the sense of humor, the memory, there's just, it is a good, camaraderie. It's just, it's a great group of people that listen to the show. I think you would agree.
It's the greatest listeners. I will compare that, the numbers game listeners.
Smart and funny.
To any show I've ever done, any show anybody else is doing. Smart, witty, funny, knowledgeable, you know, ready to bust balls. It's awesome.
All right, Gilly, I appreciate you staying up, beating the book, Megapod, a numbers game. What else? What else you want to plug here? Anything?
What else would I like to plug? Nothing. Nothing I can think of. That'll do it. Yeah,
all right,
appreciate
man. It. We will be listening tomorrow. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Gil Alexander. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.